coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Not your normal Waddle and Sylvie show, and maybe it's a good thing. These are important conversations. We thank Jonathan Hood for joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. We thank our listeners for being honest and open. And any views, whether, you know, it goes against the grain, I think the conversation's the most important part. We want to hear from you. We want your voice to be heard today, like every day. But on this topic especially, 312-332-3776.
I think the most important thing really you can do, my own personal opinion as a human being, is don't be dismissive of others' concerns that they're expressing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like if somebody's expressing a concern, well, it may not have crossed your mind. Don't be dismissive of that concern. I think that's kind of a message that has also resonated with me over the last several days.
It's a good point. And about a week or 10 days ago, we had Jason Hayward on. He's always been a very willing participant on the Waddle and Sylvie show. He's always got thoughts. We love talking to him. He's a great leader. And I didn't think that we'd be putting in the request this quickly. But when I thought about people in this city and the important voices that they can talk about and things that we can't, Jason Hayward was one of the first that came to our mind. And I was very happy to hear that he was willing to come on with us today. Jason Hayward from the Cubs joining Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Thank you for doing that, Jason.
No, I appreciate you bringing me on, fellas. Good afternoon. And you know, again, just thank you for thinking of me when you think about these topics and what we got going on right now.
Jason, so just if you could explain to us how you're feeling about just everything right now.
You know, how I'm feeling, it's sad to see. But I feel like this is on a broken record, so to speak. You know, I'm 30 years old now. Growing up in McDonough, Georgia, my dad is from Beaufort, South Carolina. My mom's from Queens, New York. And my dad, you know, would always share things with me, my brother and I, about how we need to be careful, how we need to be aware of how the world is going to look at us. He didn't do that just to do it. You know, that wasn't something he was proud of having to do and having to explain. But it was something from experience that he could take and know that he went to one of the first integrated schools in South Carolina, you know, integrated movie theaters, you know, having separate bathrooms, things like that. You know, in 1989, I was born, and a little before that time, or right around that time, my parents were living in New York. And that was the time of, you know, when this documentary, When They See Us, came out about the five African-American black kids that were, you know, framed for doing something wrong at being in Central Park when they weren't the ones that did it, you know. So it was just a scary time for him. But to me, you know, bringing it back home to the point of it feels like a broken record and where we're watching a rerun. I feel like these things continue to happen over and over and over again. And you have people continuously and helplessly trying to find a solution.
So, and the solution is important, and it's going to take a lot of hard work, I assume, Jason. But where do we start? For someone like Waddle and me who have not walked in your shoes, like you just expressed, what can we do?
What can you guys do? I mean, hats off to you for having me on, for having this day and these segments, you know, just isolated for these conversations. I think that is a big deal. You know, I mean, that's, I mean, I hope you don't take that lightly when I say hats off to you. I mean, I commend you guys for that, man, because the beginning of it is people being willing to listen, people being aware of how serious other people's concerns are and taking that into consideration when they go on about their day. Now, while everyone has different views and different concerns and, you know, I feel like ethnicity, race, gender, all these things, people have their own struggles, man. But I think at the end of the day, right now, we're seeing, you know, a lot of conversation about this that we've seen before. But I think it's being spread a little bit faster through social media, through LeBron James, through the rest of the NBA, through other athletes, you know, through people that are starting to, you know, look around and say, you know, I'm not African American, I'm not black, but this affects me too. This affects my kids. This affects them going to school. This affects my friends and their families and their generation. So I think, I don't know, I guess woke could be the term. I feel like everyone's a little bit more woke right now, regardless of how ugly things have been, how hard things have been on the people that are being affected most.
Would you say the peak of your concern has to do with you being a father?
The peak of my concern? Well, I mean, I have family. You know, I have a big family. I have friends. You know, I'm going to be a father one day, hopefully, you know, God willing. That's going to be something that, you know, I'm going to have to express to my children. Right. You know, and that's a responsibility of mine. It's one of those responsibilities that, you know, everyone does not have. And to me, yeah, like that's going to be a big weight on my shoulders. And I've seen it through my dad's eyes, you know, that, you know, he was able to relax a little bit more as we got older, as we got established, my brother and I, as we kind of paved our way into this world and realized, hey, like, you know, what he was saying and what he was trying to show us is that you got to be ready for whatever. So to me, I have a lot of lessons from him, a lot of lessons from family, a lot of life lessons in general when it comes to racism and how it can affect people.
Jason Hayward joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. How different is it to be an athlete, Jason? I mean, do you look to sports and say sports is what's united people from all different backgrounds, or is there still work to be done even in professional sports as far as relationships with other people?
I feel like, you know, sports, anything, life, I feel like it comes with everything. You know, there's good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's definitely a lot more, you know, bonding. There's a lot more people putting differences aside, a lot more diversity in sports and people being understanding of someone else's concerns. Because you go to work with these people. You watch them leave their kids. You watch them sacrifice. You watch them push towards common goals with each other. And to me, that naturally, you know, brings people together. And that's from a player perspective, as an athlete perspective. Fans, I feel like very similar thing. But, you know, on the other end of both of those perspectives, I think at the end of the day, people do go home and people are raised differently. People do have different histories in their family. And, you know, to me, there's a certain amount of respect you have to have for that. But at the end of the day, hatred is hatred and evil is evil. And when it's hidden, it's one thing. But when it's put out there for everyone to see, it's pretty blatant.
Jason, do you believe that sports is a vehicle by which some of the healing can take place, or do you think that's asking too much of an industry like sports in general?
I don't think it's asking too much. I think it's a platform. I think it's a part of entertainment. You know, like I was saying a little bit earlier, I think these guys speaking up right now, men and women speaking up right now and using their platforms as a voice, as a positive voice, you know, using their aim at the right things, at the right demographics and the right people, the right industries. I think that is going a long way in 2020 with what we're taking on. So I definitely think sports is something that can be a vehicle to help. But you always got to be aware, unfortunately.
Jason, I sort of remember this, but I'm not positive. When you left the Cardinals, and this isn't something about St. Louis, but it's more about society. Mm-hmm. People were upset at you because you chose the Cubs and you didn't pick the Cardinals. And I remember looking, I think you were on Twitter back in those days, and I looked at your timeline and I was disgusted. And we brought that up. Can you share that experience and what that is like to see that over a sports decision?
I mean, I guess I'll share it. And what I can say about it is that, you know, much like any, you know, African-American, much like any black person would understand, is that wasn't my first time dealing with racism. You know, that wasn't my first time taking heat or getting shit from someone because they weren't happy with a decision I made or weren't happy with what I was doing, and they chose to use that way, you know, to try and get under my skin or to get at me or show how upset they were. You know, being from Georgia, you know, it's a real thing there, you know, and I mean, I've seen this stuff you know, from time to time. When I first decided to go play baseball, you know, start like, take travel ball seriously, I guess, in high school, you know, I was going to go play for a team in East Cobb. And my dad was like, hey, like you're trying to pursue a dream and you're trying to go join a business. You're trying to be a professional baseball player. And I just want to let you know that, you know, certain things may happen to you along the way, but I don't need you to come complaining to me if someone calls you the N-word. I don't need you to come complain to me if someone, you know, talks shit about your mom, your family, this and that. You know, come to me if someone's, you know, putting their hands on you. But other than that, like, you need to be ready for all these things that are going to come your way. So playing in Atlanta, growing up there, you know, I remember being in the minor leagues in Atlanta dealing with racism. And we were playing a team. The Mets were in Savannah, Georgia at the time. And we're the Braves. We're playing in Georgia, right? We're playing, you know, a New York City team, a minor league affiliate, and I'm with the Braves, and I remember fans down there being racist towards me for no reason. So as far as the St. Louis situation, you know, I felt like I understood, you know, people were going to be upset. People weren't going to be happy. But my mindset with that was that I did my job. You know, I did what I had to do for myself. I did what I had to do for my family. And that was after the fact when it came to the decision. But the impact of me leaving and them being upset, I feel like I did my job there and made a good impact on the city of St. Louis.
Jason, do you still experience that today in 2020 in a major league ballpark?
I would say I see it less now directed at me. I can't say that I don't see it in places. You know, I won't, you know, single out any places that I do, because to me that's not important. But it still does exist, and I think that's the message that needs to be put out there. A lot of us, you know, still deal with that on a daily basis. And, you know, again, we don't make excuses for it, because everyone has a struggle. Everybody has a hustle. Everyone has something that's tearing at them and nagging at them on and off the field. But this one is just, as we can see right now, I mean, the reason we're having this discussion, this one is on a bigger scale, because there's a lot of destruction going on right now that is – been based off of, you know, someone's actions and hatred.
Jason, how do you balance the intense desire to get back to being a baseball player and getting back on the field and doing what you love with also the emotions that you have as an African American now? Or is this just something you have to do both every day you wake up?
I mean, you got to take that shit in stride. You have to. You don't have a choice. You know, we didn't choose to be black. No, just like you guys didn't choose your race, ethnicity. We didn't choose to be where we're from. This is just what was given to us. So, yeah, we don't have the luxury of trying to separate that. It's just a part of it. You know, you drive outside in your neighborhood and, you know, you're in a different neighborhood than you know, a lot of other people that are black, and, you know, they don't look like you, and, you know, people are going to look at that differently. But it's just – it's because it's not normal. And I think that's the big thing. You know, regardless of whether someone's racist or not, they're still going to be curious, because they don't see a lot of people that look like you around. So as far as getting ready for the season and staying locked in there, this is what I do. This is what I love. This is a passion. Got a great city to do it for in Chicago. So that's, to me, there's nothing going to stop me from doing that. And whether it's hatred or whatever it is, I mean, I made it to this point. And that's something we all have to deal with. And I got no excuse, and I don't ever plan on using that as an excuse going forward.
And Jason, something that I've said to you before that I've really appreciated as a kid who grew up here is the way you've embraced this city, the charities you've given to, the way you love this city, like you grew up here. You have a true love for it. So when you see on the television the looting, because a lot of people have said to me, and I'm trying to learn all this, that the root of everything starts with George Floyd. Without George Floyd, that's where it starts. That's the problem. And the looting is to make people listen. But I'm sure there are better ways, too. So that's where I'm conflicted. What are your views when you see the looting of a city that you love?
Well, at first I'll say, you know, the root of this is from George Floyd. But that's yesterday. That's a few days ago. Right. What about right now? What's going on? What about what happens tomorrow? What about 20 years from now? Just to keep that real. But when I see people doing this in the city, I see confusion. I see anger. I see hatred. And these are all things that people deal with as human beings on a daily basis. You know, you have some people going out there with a certain message that they're going to put out. You have other people going out there and following and thinking they're doing it for the right thing, but they don't exactly understand it. you have other people going out there just for their own gain and want to be out there and be a part of a movement, you know, so to speak, because it's 2020 and social media and news travels fast. You know, some people don't want to miss it. So for me, attitude reflects leadership, and I'll always say that. You know, from sports to being a parent to, you know, running a business, and I feel like when you see law enforcement, you know, make certain judgments, lapse in judgment, and having situations like this where you have people grieving and hurting, you're going to see a lot of people that feel like if police are supposed to be leaders of this country and supposed to protect and serve, then they're not going to know how to take that. And they're going to look at that as, all right, well, if they don't care, I don't care. And to me, that's the trickle-down effect. And what sucks is there are a lot of good cops. There are a lot of great cops. You know, I'm friends with some, you know, close family friends, to where they're going to take a lot of heat for this as well. And at the same time, on the other end, from the people that are going out and doing peaceful protests, you know, those aren't the ones that are getting put on the news, right? Those are the ones that, you know, you see LeBron tweeting about and trying to post and shed light. You see other people, you know, on social media, whether it's comedians, whether it's other athletes, actresses, and whatnot. They're trying to push that vibe because it's happening. People are doing it the right way, but you also see people doing it the wrong way because, again, attitude reflects leadership. When you have hatred, when you have anger, when you have people that dealt with this 40 years ago, when you have people that dealt with this 20 years ago, people that dealt with it 10 years ago, people for the first time dealing with it now, you got people at all different walks of life who have different, you know, to me, different emotions about it and different thoughts on how to handle it.
Jason, I apologize for the awkward transition. I don't mean to be insensitive to ask you a baseball question, but are you getting more confident that, in fact, you're getting closer to an agreement that would lead to a Major League Baseball season?
I mean, the only thing I'm confident in is the fact that I'm going to be ready when that happens. That the fact that my teammates and I are doing a great job of staying connected and we're working hard, having fun, and enjoying, you know, the new challenge. And I feel like you guys have heard me say that about our team, about our group. You know, we enjoy challenges and we have fun with them. So to me, in my mind, this is a new normal again. And I'm working out, having fun, worked out today earlier. You know, spending time with my family, spending time with my dogs best way I can. But as far as the season goes, I feel like, you know, only a certain amount of that I can control. And I think the best thing we're doing as a players union is just everyone trying to be aware, trying to stay on the same page. And after that, we let the process run its course. But I do know that we hope to have baseball. I do know that we all want to get back out there for ourselves, for the game, and for the hard work that a lot of people put in. But for this country right now, because we do need something to bring everyone together.
That's for sure. Yeah. Jason, I can't thank you enough for picking up the phone. This means a lot. I think it's important for our listeners to hear all this, and hopefully we'll all be better for it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
No, absolutely, fellas. And I'll just leave you with this. I mean, like you said, as I was coming on, you know, everyone's not going to have the same opinion. Everyone's not going to agree, but having the conversations, putting it out there and being aware of how we're all thinking as different individuals is a huge step in the right direction. So I appreciate you for that.
We appreciate you. Yes. Jason Heyward from the Cubs, always a class act, great leader. We knew he would be good, especially with what he's dealt with growing up in Georgia, leaving the Cardinals. You've heard about these experiences. Want to hear your thoughts, 332-3776. The floor is yours. Let your voice be heard. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
See, Waddle, sometimes it's more about than just the batting average, you know, or, hey, how much does this guy make? You just see the character.
It's leadership.
Yeah, yeah, you character, see the character. Leadership. Someone called it, we're in the middle of life's rain delay, and we need Jason Heyward more than ever.
Well said.
If you missed that, we'll play you some later in the show. And remember, you can always download the podcast on ESPN Chicago. I want to get to more calls, Waddle. Steven in Dallas is always a P1. He's always listening, and he's always got thoughts. Steven, you're on ESPN 1000. What's going on?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
We're hanging in today.
Yeah, same here. I want to offer my perspective as an Asian American living in America. This COVID-19, unfortunately, has brought out the worst towards us Asian Americans. And by the way, I'm not trying to compare our situation with African Americans who have suffered far greater oppression. So I hope they're not upset when I say this. But the COVID-19 has brought a lot of racist attacks, both physical and verbal, to Asian Americans all over the world. And out of the two cops that was arrested, or actually that was there when George Floyd got killed, two of them were Asian Americans. And apparently one of them, their sister, was married to Derek Chauvin, who got arrested and charged. So whatever their motive was, the damage is done. And as an Asian American who has to deal with this, it's very, very disheartening, and it sickens to my stomach that even the Asian Americans who wear a badge and a gun are seen in such limelight when we are trying to overcome our own history with the institutional racism. I'm a Japanese American. I've heard stories from my friend's grandparents about the internment camp during World War II in the early 1940s and the sadness that he had to deal with before and after the war was over and overcoming that death stigma. And to me, I just want people to acknowledge, you know, a person of color, you know, we do our part. You know, Asian parents, we were taught that never, you know, just stick to the books, do a good grade, be a lawyer and doctor and all that kind of, you know, stereotypes. But it's actually true. And, you know, not volunteer or do nothing in the community. And I feel, you know, this monumental shift within our community with the institutional racism, the whitewashing of Asian Americans in the TV and movies, as well as the presidential candidate Andrew Yang's treatment of the mainstream media during the presidential debate, that made me think long and hard about the progression that is still needed in this country, you know, forward that we need. And Sylvie, before I go, I want you to know this. I hope you beat cancer. Not because you and Waddle are in a very privileged platform to speak out, whether you guys want to admit or not, because you're a white person in a privileged position, but because so that your son, Mason, can live in a better world and you will be able to see it firsthand, whether you play the role in it or not. Thank you, guys. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Stephen. Yeah. I plan on being here with Mason. And look, everything Waddle mentions is, you know, no, they don't have to grow up with the same fears as others, but I'm trying to teach them. I'm trying to do the best we can the right way. The right way.
Yeah, listen, I'm 53 years old. What stays on my mind more than anything is my children. Without a doubt. And they're adults. One's 27, one's 24 and lives in New York. My third one just graduated from college and I have a 16-year-old. So they're, three of the four of them are adults, and yet they still occupy the majority of my thoughts and my concern. And I mean, with that in mind, add the concept of being concerned about your kids with having to deal with stuff that African-Americans and people of color have to deal with, not just the same feelings I'm talking about, but also the concept that they may not be treated in an equal manner by those that are in our society.
Rick in LaGrange. Hey, Rick, you're on ESPN 1000.
Good evening. Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay. First of all, let me say Sylvie Strong, and then let me jump right to it. First of all, let me comment on some of the looting and some of the looters that we've been seeing. Now, I've talked to a few of them. Some of them are friends, and some of them are just people I picked their brain. I don't condone what they're doing. I don't condone why they're doing it, but I'm trying to understand the reasons. And it seems to me that all of them have the same answer, that they're looting, especially in areas and towns where these cops are living and they're hiding in these communities. And the villages know what kind of people they are. The departments know what kind of people these cops are, these bad apples. And they seem to just let them stay comfortable in there. So I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's why I believe most of these people are looting. Now, they are damaging our own, and I say our own, African-American communities. We don't see a whole lot of African-American officers in the limelight like that. So I can't speak to their reason of why they're tearing up our neighborhoods. But let me just switch gears right quick, and I want to talk about police officers. I just think they have too much power because they have the power to ruin your life or, like we saw this past week, to kill you. They can write tickets. They can write falsehoods. They can plant guns, drugs, whatever they want to do. And more times than not, it's going to be their word against your word, and they're the ones that's going to win it. You're going to have to prove your point. So I just think the officers, especially the bad officers, have too much to grab with society, and I think they just are able to ruin people. And I think society is tired of all the bad apples, as Hoodie said, they're not bad apples, but all these bad cops who have the opportunity to ruin lives. They may not kill you, but they might put a felony on you, and you got to try to fight and beat that. And chances are you probably won't beat it. Again, it's your word against their word. So I just want to spin that wheel and see you guys' comments on it.
I appreciate your words. Thank you.
I think that everyone deserves to face the same justice for their crimes, whether you're a police officer or you're an average citizen. Like, the police officer that exterminated George Floyd doesn't deserve any more protection from the law than the average citizen. There needs to be justice for the, I won't even call them transactions, because this was a crime. This was, you know, a killing. And by the way, I believe that the coroner has come out and said as such, despite what was reported yesterday. So,
the confirmation, yes.
Yes. So
that it was. Go ahead. Mallard, do you want to wait till after the break?
I want to respond to Rick's point when we come back.
Right when we come back, we want to respond to Rick's point. And again, this is an open forum, okay? We all don't think alike. We're all going to say something that maybe we didn't mean. It's a very, very touchy subject, but it's important to have the conversation.
I think it's important to get Adam and Jeff's perspective as well, because they're our teammates.
Sure.
Their voices are as meaningful as ours.
Of course, and your voice can be powerful, and on a 50,000-watt radio station, amplified. 332-3776. More coming up.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
We continue to offer you the floor at 312-332-3776. Seeing these times over the last couple of weeks since George Floyd was killed, and then the nation reacting, and then what's happened here in our city and suburbs as well, the entire area over the last 2 to 3 days.
I will say this to you, because we've spent a lot of time talking about police behavior. I have also seen on social media some things that are very encouraging. Whether it was, I believe, the police chief in Michigan.
That was the best.
And now I'm seeing somewhere where a Chattanooga police chief is telling his officers, if you're okay with what happened in Minnesota, then you need to turn your badges in. I think we've seen a lot of examples, whether it be on social media or the regular news or wherever it is, where there are, you know, obviously there are hundreds of thousands of good police officers doing the right thing and trying to help heal the community. So it is encouraging to see those different instances, whether it be on social media or the news in general.
Meller, what did you want to say in response to the last caller?
So, Waddle, I'm glad you brought that up, because that kind of leads perfectly to my thoughts here. Our last caller, Rick, mentioned, you know, what he referenced what Hoodie had said earlier in the show. You know, first of all, language is important. And so when you easily dismiss it as a few bad apples, first and foremost, you're taking the emphasis out of the fact that a man in power murdered another man. So by just saying a few bad apples, first of all, you're lessening the impact of what actually happened. And to that point, if you want to say a few bad apples, go ahead and finish the entire saying, which is a few bad apples spoils the bunch. And what Waddle just said, there's plenty of great officers out there who do more good for the community than can ever be known. And yet, the actions of a few that aren't always brought to light, if they're not being recorded on video, can harm what the entire organization is thought of as. And so just by the actions of, and again, it's not a few, it's more than a few, because we've seen it now for decades, black men and women killed by officers, and the systematic injustice that goes on for the officers that are made to feel like rats or are being told that if they call out the injustices in their department, they're not going to be well received, or they're going to lose their jobs, or they're going to have to walk away from their career because they're going to be made to be felt like an outsider because they're willing to actually speak up for truth. But too many people, the rot that comes from one or two bad apples is too much. And right. So that is why it is important that when, while you've said this earlier, what's the change? The bare minimum is that if you're going to be a police officer in this society, if we want to have a better society, we need them to be held to a higher standard. And you know what? If that takes a complete reform of how police become policemen and women, then that needs to be done. Because clearly what we're seeing on the streets, the looting that's going on right now, that's the other thing. Don't let that take your eye off the ball. The idea that someone wants to point to looting and say, that's terrible, that it is terrible, it cannot be done. But let's not forget that black men and women die as a result of the people who are supposed to protect and serve. And that's the true problem in this society right now. So don't allow others to point to you and say, the looting, I agree the looting is bad.
Right.
But when
Biggest issue is the racism, where it started with a man who didn't deserve to die who died. And then, look, I'm with you. I can do both. I could denounce looting, but understand that the biggest issue is the race.
Right.
So, and then, well, Mellor, to your point, I don't know if you guys saw the video. During one protest in one city, they were arresting somebody, and one of the cops had his knee on the other person's neck that they were arresting. And then people were yelling at him to take his knee off the neck, and finally his partner physically moved his knee off of the neck. You know what I mean? Because,
yeah.
And then wasn't just a product of, hey, looking the other way. No, take his knee off his neck. Let's arrest him. Let's get him in the car.
Right. There's also been examples of peaceful protesters protecting businesses, local businesses,
yes,
from those that are looking to destroy property and steal things and assault physically other people. So not only have the peaceful protesters exercised one of the most valuable rights you have as an American, they've also gone beyond the call of duty to protect some of these places from those that don't have the same intentions.
We'll get Abdallah's thoughts here in a minute. I wanted to get back to the phones, though. Honey Bear in Crystal Lake, longtime listener. You're on ESPN 1000. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Before I get started, Sylvie, been wanting to call you forever. Sylvie Strong got one of my shirts. Seriously, you've been on my mind since.
Thank you. Appreciate your support, as always.
And then my second thing, To preface, Steve kind of did it beforehand. I just wanted to start by, if I say anything, I understand that I am not African American. I am not someone that understands this. I'm just trying to unload some of the emotional labor that is expected from people of non-white race. And if I say something wrong in this and it comes up offensive, I apologize for it. I'm just trying to do my part to what I understand as someone that has learned what is absolutely important for us that are not of non-white race. And that is, first off, the two points I have here is that it's not the job of black people and brown people and Asian Americans and whatnot to teach white people what to do. And I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing you, but one of the things that you keep asking, you asked Jay Hood this, you asked Hayward this, what can we do? What is the answer? That is not something you should be asking black folk and people who are like that, because one of the things we don't understand as white people is the amount of emotional labor it takes for people of color to continue to explain these problems. There's a famous quote, it's so exhausting to be a black person in America because they're constantly having to do this over and over and over again. And it's emotionally draining. It is the job of us as white people who truly do want to make a difference to educate ourselves by seeking it out on our own. It's one thing to continue to ask because we're afraid of making mistakes because that's part of our training from day one when we are born in this skin. Hayward said it himself, you know, I didn't choose to be born black. It was just how it was. And from that moment, we are taught that we are supposed to be a certain way. I grew up in Crystal Lake. You can't get much whiter here. And it wasn't until I started teaching, I'm a teacher in Waukegan, that I realized I have been trained since birth to have these stereotypes in my head and these certain answers that I think I should be doing when that's not the case at all. And I need to do more as a person that now understands this. And I know the term is woke, but that's not really the truth. It's you're awakened and you've taken the blinders off, you know, like the term, oh, I don't see color. That's actually one of the worst terms to say because it means that you're blind. You don't see it. And that's the important thing that we have to do. We have to educate ourselves by looking at books that talk about racism, like Bias, Uncovering the Prejudice that we shapes and sees what I think, that talks about how America and, quite frankly, the world kind of programs how white privilege works. And watching documentaries like 13, talking about the prison system, and getting ourselves to know more about that so that we can take off that burden for people who are of non-white color. And then on top of that, the next thing we have to do is we have to teach our fellow white folk that we have this problem. It shouldn't be the job of black folk to teach them. It's our job to teach other white people. There was a Black Lives Matter protest in Woodstock, which McHenry County is a very, very white, very conservative area. And I saw so many people there that were white, that were trying to work in solidarity. And one of the things that the speakers had said is that it is now our job to teach the rest of us, and us being the ones of privilege, to teach everyone that this is wrong. Like, I get a lot of times where I have kids, I'm a coach as well as a teacher, and I'll talk to people from town, from where I'm at, and they're like, oh, Waukegan, that's a rough area. Rough is subliminal racism right there. It connotates, you know, ghetto or poor or minority. And I challenge that. I'm like, why is it considered rough? Is it because they're poor? Is it because they don't have a lot of white people there? And it's uncomfortable. When you first start learning about this, and this is something I've learned over the last 7 years teaching in communities of color, it is very uncomfortable because we have this fragility that we're trained with. But it's so important to say, you know what, this is how it is systemically. I have to understand that it may not be my fault that I feel this way, and I may feel horrible about myself, but I have to not take it personally, and I have to grow from that and understand that I will never understand. But I can stand with you and I can pass the mic so that when someone of color is trying to share their experiences, like you guys are doing today, what you're doing and allowing callers come in and talk about their situation, that is such an important tool to be a white ally that really truly wants to generate change. Pass the mic, let them speak, because it's not our job to speak for them and we can't talk over them. We have to let them show, but we also have to be sensitive to the emotional labor it takes. I'm not going to lie, when Waddle had asked, like, you know, talking about the experiences of racism that Hayward had, you can tell there was a pause in his voice, because do you know how many people of color are asked that every single day by white people? And that's something we have to understand, and we have to thank them for sharing that labor and do more so that we don't have to have them spend that labor. and we can do it for ourselves.
All right, Honey Bear, thank you. Thank you. It was some really, really good teaching moments. There's a counterpoint in there that I'd like to get after. 312-332-3776. Again, we're giving you the floor today. Your voice can be heard. We'll respond to all that coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Taves posted something really good on Instagram. We'll get to that here in a minute. Waddle and Sylvie dealing with what this country has dealt with for a long, long time. The latest instance, obviously, with George Floyd, and then the reaction of the country over the last week, specifically very dangerous moments here in the city of Chicago over the last couple of days. We're giving you guys the floor at 312-332-3776.
Remember, we wanted to get Adam Abdallah's thoughts as well, as he's a vital member of this program.
Yeah, and I want to get everyone's calls. The one thing I will say to Honey Bear is this. I'm a firm believer in this. And I started the show by saying I am not perfect. Like, I don't even know. Like, I'm a flawed human. I still am not a perfect dad. I still learn every day how to be better. It's my favorite thing to do. I need to be a better husband.
We all fall into the same category.
Like we're all imperfect. I feel like I come from the school of when good-hearted people want to help people who don't have a racist bone in their body, and they are just asking a question, whether it's how can I help or how, what do we do? Or I come from the school that there are no dumb questions. And I believe this in any walk of life, in any conversation. I feel like when you approach it and someone tells you and they wag the finger, you're doing it wrong. That's a turnoff to a lot of people. Yeah. And I just feel like the best way to have the conversation is a lot of times we're going to be flawed.
We're
but
clumsy.
I think we've got to learn. So I think by telling people that there's something they can ask and there's others they can't, people don't know where to start. Then not everybody is that smart. We're all like, it was always taught to me, hey, just take care of what's in your backyard. You know what I mean? If you take care of what's in your backyard, we're all good. And everyone does that. But that's not the way it works. Obviously, we all got to do better. But I'm just saying, a lot of people, it's a turnoff. And that's my two cents.
Yeah, so, I totally understand.
Abdallah, what did you want to have to say?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. And I, you know, like we had a caller from Dallas who said that he's an Asian American. I'm an Arab American. So I have dealt with racism, and I even in the most minute form. And it's not fun. So I can't even imagine what it's like to wake up knowing that you have to watch your back, to wake up knowing that you have to worry about driving down certain streets. I'll never know what that fear is like. My kids will never know what that fear is like. And that's just something that, you know, I can't control or anything like that. But ultimately, I think that this change starts at the lowest level. Police are supposed to be an ally in the neighborhood. Police aren't supposed to be the principal. Police are supposed to be someone that when you're in trouble, you call for help. Police, and that starts with police ingraining themselves in the community and with people and knowing that they are a source that they can rely on, and not like it's calling, you know, the principal to come in and he's going to come down and ground you or suspend you or whatever, or kill you, whatever it is, right? That's how it's supposed to be. That's how it should be. And I think this all starts at the lowest level with voting and everything else. 2016 had the lowest turnout of voters in 20 years. We are at only 55% voting, and that's for a major election. The smaller elections are even worse. Chris Black and I were on yesterday morning. We had a great caller who said, do you know your alderman? Do you know your councilman or woman? Do you know your judges? Do you know your police chief? Do you know your senators? Do you know your congressmen? Do you know your presidents? Do you know your vice president? Do you know all these people? And if you don't, you need to do more. When I go into a voting booth and I vote for an alderman or for mayor or for whatever, on the back sheet of that voter's card, there's 10 judges listed that are up for election. There's all these other places in the county that are up for election. If you don't do your homework, and I'm a victim of it too. I don't do the work, and I need to start doing the work more. But if you don't know those people that you're putting into office, you need to start doing more. That's where change is going to happen, to doing a little bit of research. All the information's out there. People put their platforms out there. They put what they're going to vote for, all that kind of stuff. Do you know what your congressman voted for last week in Congress? Did you agree with it? If not, make sure you vote them out in the next election. All these elections, there's not just an election every 4 years. There's a few elections every single year. And I think this also starts at home. Jonathan talked about it. Jason Hayward talked about it. The first time I was called a racial epithet, I was in elementary school. And that's what happens to a lot of African Americans, a lot of black people, a lot of minorities, is that this stuff is taught. And where do kids learn stuff? Kids, you guys have kids, you know it. When you swear, they repeat the swear word. They learn it at home. That you have to teach kids. And now is a great opportunity. I don't have kids, so I can't talk about teaching them. But I know how I was taught. Yeah. And I was taught to respect everybody, that we're all equal, and to understand that we are also unequal. We're equal and we're unequal. What I go through every day is not the same thing that an African-American, that a Mexican-American, that an Asian-American, that anybody else like that goes through. And I need to know that. And so just saying you don't see color, that's the wrong answer. We should be seeing color, because that's the problem. It's not like Jonathan Hood said, it's not all lives matter. This is Black Lives Matter, right? I saw a tweet today. Someone said it, and it's not. And so you're going through this now. It's like, it's not all cancers matter, right? All cancers do matter. But at the same time, this is a specific thing. Like, we're talking about people that are losing their lives from a certain group that we don't see. And they want to be seen. They want to be heard. These people just want their voices to count as much as our voices as white people count. And to give people a voice like this, a forum like this, is great. But remember May 30th and May 31st in November. And remember it in next year's election and the election after that and the election after that. Because that's where change starts. If you don't like something, the only power we have besides protesting and peaceful protesting, not looting, peaceful protesting is peaceful protesting will get our attention. But that attention needs to be paid forward when we talk about these individuals and when we either remove them from office or keep good people in office.
Right, real quick, it's such a great point, Adam, and people think about voting just on a national front. Your local voting is in a lot of ways is more important than it's the most important thing of all, because they are making decisions about the community you live in. And you like, I think it's a great point. You have maybe your loudest voice is with the things that actually the decisions are being made that most affect you in your own community. You know what I'm saying?
Abdallah, what you said there may have been the best thing you've ever said on the radio station. I mean, no, honestly, it was really.
And you say a lot
I'm
of
moved
good things.
By it. You do. I'm really moved by it. That was really good. And more of that, please. 312-332-3776. We give you the voice in 2 minutes.